Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my people. This is Splash, and my pond is open. We have a great show for you tonight. So much to cover. Lots on tap. The number to call is 215-383-5730, and I encourage you to jump right in. Wade carefully if you must, but remember, everyone swims at their own risk. Tonight is our last show at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time because on Monday we move to prime time. That's right, prime time, baby. 8 p.m. from here on out, doing the thing I love to do most, talking smack about politics. We also now have a blog, so all our shows are posted there, past, present, and future. Go to 1111broadcasting.com. That's the numerals, 1111broadcasting.com, and you can listen to a show, review my show notes, make a comment or suggestion, or just say hi. You can also follow me on Facebook at 1111broadcasting. I'm telling you now, Facebook is not my gig, so if you have any helpful suggestions, leave me a comment. And I sure will take it to heart. If you miss a show, don't sweat it. Shows linked, the links are listed on the blog, so just go to 1111broadcasting.com and you'll be able to listen whatever show you missed. Now you can jump right into the show chat room here tonight. You just need a free login from Blog Talk Radio. It takes less than a minute. Put in your email address, pick a screen name, a password, and voila, you can jump right into the chat room, pick on people, pick on me, or just say hi again. Of course, you don't need to create an account to call. Just dial the number right on the top of the show page or the number I'm giving you now, 215-383-5730. Last night, we had a lot of fun with Obama's new freebie program, 2 years of free community college for everyone. In his last State of the Union address, he introduced the MyRA account, individual retire accounts that belong to us. Incidentally, that's what Social Security should have been from the get-go. But that idea, MyRA, apparently didn't mean a whole lot because we never heard about it again. This idea, the free community college for the first 2 years, community colleges are 2 years. This idea, however, may get some traction because it could lead to another mass voter purchase by way of yet another big government giveaway. Tennessee is already doing this program, so we modeled healthcare after Massachusetts, not really, but that's what they say. And now we're going to model higher education after Tennessee. To be fair, Tennessee has made great gains in education, moving from 45th to 21st in overall education quality. I swear that's because my kids moved to Tennessee. But who knows? Anyway, don't ask me how they measure that, because I really just don't know. Haven't really looked into it. 45th to 21st, though, that's what the link I read said. We also had fun with Obama's second veto threat over an accept-and-fix proposal by the Elmos. It is what the Smurfs say they wanted. Accept the law as imperfect and let's work together and fix it. The bipartisan law fixes Obama's nonsensical definition of full-time. He has it defined as 30 hours. It would fix it to 40. The Smurfs are arguing against the fix, and the president has threatened to veto it. So instead of the Smurfs offering up their own package of ACA fixes, they offered up their own package of ACA fixes instead. Wait a minute. No, they didn't. Not one Smurf has offered up even one fix to this law that they swear is imperfect. We should accept it and fix it. And we also touched on a few familiar candidates, potential candidates for 2016. Tonight we'll touch on, well, all of them. I don't know if I'll touch on them all because there's so many. But we'll especially touch on the whack jobs. Did you know that the Smurfs had their own set of whack jobs? Who'd have thunk it, right? I mean, left? If time permits, we'll also make a few observations about this horrific Islamic terror attack in Paris. I love the French, but I have a few observations. I've been watching that story as it's ongoing, but now as I see things developing, there are a few observations that beyond the tragic results of that attack. And I'll talk about that if time permits. If not, we'll do that on Monday's show. And if time really permits, I want to talk about gas and oil because I am so excited. I paid $2.06 a gallon for gas yesterday. I love it. But there are some things we need to be aware of when the price of gas plummets this much, because I mean, in my lifetime, I've never seen it go down to this degree. First up, we'll talk about the jobs report, though, that came out today. Very nice, but there are some things about which we need to be leery, and I want to talk about those. All of this and your phone calls coming up, but first, let's surf the news. In Paris, the AP, of course, is reporting that with explosions and gunfire, security forces on Friday ended a three-day terror spree around Paris, killing two Al-Qaeda-linked brothers who staged a murderous rampage at the satirical paper and an associate who seized hostages at a kosher supermarket to try and help them escape. The worst terror attacks France has seen in decades killed at least 20 people, including the three gunmen. Who cares about them? A fourth suspect, the common law wife of the market attacker, was still at large and believed to be armed and dangerous. I'll bet you that she's the mastermind behind all this. Not trying to be sexist, but women do tend to be cunning. Al-Qaeda's branch in Yemen said it directed the attacks against a publication, Charlie Hebdo, to avenge the honor of the Prophet Muhammad, a frequent target of the weekly's satire. Hey, look, you know, I mean, they targeted us from Afghanistan, and we attacked Afghanistan. What is France going to do here? This will be something to take note of, but I'll talk more about that if time permits. Reuters is reporting that the FBI and the Justice Department prosecutors have recommended bringing criminal charges against former CIA Chief David Petraeus for improperly providing classified information to a female Army Reserve officer with whom he was having an affair. That was reported first in the New York Times on Friday. The newspaper cited officials who spoke on condition of anonymity when they do that. Anyway, anonymity. So there you go. The Justice Department's investigation focused on whether Petraeus gave the woman, Paula Broadwell, access to his CIA email account and other highly classified information. The Times said officials have recommended felony charges. The Times reported that Petraeus had indicated to the Justice Department that he has absolutely no interest in a plea deal that would enable him to avoid a trial. Petraeus has said he did not provide classified information to Broadwell, who was writing his biography at the time of the affair. It's an interesting way to weasel your way into somebody's life. There you go. The AP in Washington is reporting that Mitt Romney told several donors on Friday that he's seriously considering a run for the White House, a change for the 2012 GOP nominee after months of insisting his career in politics is over. Romney attended a private gathering of donors in New York offices of Woody Johnson, a leading Romney donor in 2012 and owner of the New York Jets. Two people with direct knowledge of the meeting told the Associated Press about the details. Both spoke under conditions of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly about the private discussions. The meeting was first reported by the Wall Street Journal. You know, Mitt Romney's been saying, I'm not going to run. My political career is over. My time has come and gone. But you know what I think really did it for him? Jeb Bush jumping into the race. He probably looked at Jeb Bush and said, if Jeb Bush can do it, why can't I do it? And as a moderate looking at the rest of these field, I can see why, you know, he might consider it again. But if Mitt Romney gets the nomination again, you know, the Elmos can kiss the White House goodbye because he just won't win. He won't win. Let me repeat that. He will not win. Okay. He's too wishy-washy. The ex-wife of an oil tycoon has deposited a divorce settlement check worth almost $1 billion after refusing to cash it earlier this week. You know, I thought about that as I read that story. No one's going to say anything. And what I was thinking to myself was, this lady married to this oil tycoon, he's a multi-billionaire worth like $18 billion or something like that. And he writes her a check for $975 million. And I'll bet she just thought that was a slap in the face. Here I married this guy. I've been married to him for a while. And he's leaving, still a multi-billionaire, and he's writing me this check that is just shy of $1 billion, denying me the status that I've had while I was marrying to him of being a billionaire. Anyway, the exact number was $974,790,317.77. You know what? There's a lot of lotto hopefuls out there that would wish for a jackpot that big. So anyway, that's the divorce settlement amount. Back in November, an Oklahoma judge ordered Harold Hamm to pay Sue Ann Arnall $995.5 million, making it one of the largest divorce settlements ever. But the judge ordered Hamm to pay her $322.7 million by the end of 2014, and the remaining amount would be paid in monthly installments of $7 million. $7 million a month. That's amazing. It sounded like Hamm went above and beyond by writing that one check for almost the full amount. Earlier in the week, it was being reported that Arnall was rejecting the massive check. And Arnall was planning an appeal of the divorce settlement decision to pursue a larger share of the couple's assets. On Tuesday, the judge refused to change his decision on the settlement, and Arnall asked the state Supreme Court to review the ruling. But sometime between Tuesday and Thursday, she had a change of heart and deposited the check, probably because Hamm's net worth had been and still is plummeting right along with those oil prices. You know, you're not oil tycoon does come with its pitfalls. Anyway, Washington, Reuters is reporting that a decision by Nebraska Supreme Court on Friday cleared the way for the Xcel Keystone crude oil pipeline through the state of Nebraska. This means, according to the Republicans now, that President Barack Obama can no longer delay the project. See, President Obama is now out of excuses for blocking the Keystone Pipeline and thousands of American jobs it would create, said Speaker John Boehner in his statement. The House of Representatives is expected to pass a bill on Friday to approve the project. The White House has said, of course, that they will veto the bill. Again, the Keystone Pipeline has the support of a high majority of Americans in almost every poll, not even almost every poll I've seen. 57% was the lowest I've seen. I've seen as high as 67%. And those polls are taken all over the country, not just in Nebraska, not just in the states where the pipeline would benefit, and certainly not just in southern states where the refineries would get the oil and produce, of course, jobs there in the refinery business. Those guys are operating at half capacity, as I've reported in previous shows. So anyway, that's where it all stands right now. It is all on the shoulders of the Congress and the White House. A turbulent week of trading ended Friday with U.S. stocks finishing lower today for the third time in 5 days. Of course, you know, the last 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday, it gained over 500 points in those days. So it's just been topsy-turvy on Wall Street. The decline followed 2 days of big gains and nudged major indexes lower for the year. A slide in oil prices deepened, stoking concerns about global economic growth. Energy stocks tumbled, extending their losses for the year. Investors were also discouraged, and we'll talk a little more about this in a moment, but they were discouraged by weak U.S. wage growth in December, despite another strong increase in hiring. Those two things are kind of antithetical. We're gonna talk about that. Eric Davidson, Deputy Chief Investment Officer of Wells Fargo Private Bank, said, "We finally got jobs growing, but now people are looking through that at the actual wage growth numbers, and they want to see improvements on wages, which obviously would spur demand and consumer confidence." Anyway, the Dow Jones Industrial Average slid today 170.5 points, while the S&P lost a little over 17 points, and the NASDAQ lost a little over 32. That's just some of what was happening today. If you want to talk about any of that, then jump right in at 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. And before we get into the jobs report released this morning, let me tell you about Choice Mattress and Furniture. When it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and his staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. I took my family to Choice Mattress, and everything was considered, from the weight of each family member to their age to the way that each of us sleeps through the night. And the right mattress was personally selected for each of us. Now my whole family sleeps in great comfort all night long on beds from Choice Mattress, and yours can too. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. Chances are that if you bought a bed in Daytona Beach area in the last 20 years, then you bought it from David. With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds. And you should see all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. Go see David and the fine folks at Choice Mattress and Furniture, located on the corner of LPGA and Nova Road, 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you just have questions, David's always happy to answer them. Give him a call at 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice that you can make in your sleep. And now let's look at this jobs report. 252,000 jobs on the heels of 353,000 jobs. I would say that that is pretty good. Well, wouldn't you? I would say that that's pretty good. And of course, the December numbers were adjusted up as well. So that was pretty good. I had it in the report here, what it bumped up to. I think it was 353,000. But be that as it may, there are a couple of causes for concern here that we want to look at. No jobs report, well, some are perfect, but not all of them are ever really perfect. The unemployment rate dropped 0.2%. But the labor participation rate also dropped 0.2%. So that's not good. That means that 368,000 more people dropped out of the labor pool in this past month. They're no longer looking for work. Now, some of those were baby boomers retiring, but that only accounts for 1/3 of the 368,000 people who dropped out of the labor force. At the same time, the long-term unemployed and the unemployed part-time and people employed part-time involuntarily changed very little. Again, that's just not good. But what really has people worried is the 6-cent increase in the average hourly wage from November was nearly wiped out by a 5-cent decline in the average hourly wage this month. That's definitely not good. That's something that they're not looking for. And I know there's people out there that'll say, well, you're going to raise the minimum wage. But I'm going to tell you right now, you raise the minimum wage and it's going to drag that average down because there's going to be more people staying at that average a whole lot longer. So, but anyway, I mean, that's certainly something to consider, the minimum wage. But at the same time, where everyone's always harping and talking about high-paying, good hourly wage jobs, a 5-cent decline this month was not a good sign. But all in all, 252,000 jobs on the heels of 353,000 is quite healthy. I hope it keeps up. And let me just say this, my hat's off to the private sector. They are doing this against all odds, against every roadblock Obama can throw in their way. They are still hiring. Average jobs per month for 2014 is 246,000 jobs per month, none of which can be attributed to anything the Big O has done. In fact, he said the mean old Elmos have blocked him at every turn. So maybe, just maybe, it was the Elmos' ability as the minority party to block as many of Obama's anti-business policies as possible that has led to this pretty good year of job growth. Smurfs will always point to who was in charge when we had this job growth, just like they did when Bill Clinton was president. And the people won't remember that the Smurfs were whining the whole time. The Elmos won't let us do anything. They block everything. They're the party of no. They are the reason, the obstacle, the one standing in the way of progress. And yet, as they blocked everything that Obama tried to do and actually derailed the Obama Express, things were improving all along, weren't they? So there you go. Now, remember, by the way, when the sequestration that Obama negotiated with the House GOP was supposed to kill the economy and kill jobs. So much for Chicken Little. We cooked him up and fried him for dinner. Remember, I am for one, happy with this jobs report. So thank you. Thank you to the private sector of the United States of America. You continue to amaze me. You always will. The number to call, 215-383-5730, if you want to defend Obama and tell me what he has done that has led to this job growth of 246,000 jobs per month on average for the year of 2014. I'm listening. I'll be happy to entertain whatever it is you have to say. But remember, everyone swims here at their own risk. Now, before we talk about the 2016 potentials, remember, when it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and the staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. My whole family is now sleeping in beds from Choice Mattress, and you cannot say enough about the benefits of a great night's sleep on the right mattress chosen just for you. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds. And check out all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. Go see David at the fine folks at Choice Mattress and Furniture, located on the corner of LPGA and Nova Road, 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you just have questions, David is always happy to answer those. Give him a call at 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice that you can make in your sleep. Now let's take a look at 2016, because I find this absolutely amazing how many people are actually somewhere close to in the race for president of the United States. And I want to turn to the Democrats first, the Smurfs, as I have so affectionately come to call them. And the Smurfs actually have already three declared candidates. Did you know that? I bet you didn't know that. Two of them are absolutely whacked out of their minds. And one of them is a pretty serious candidate. He actually ran for president in 2012 with the Constitution Party. That's Robbie Wells. Robbie Wells was the former head football coach for Savannah State University. He was going to run as an independent candidate, but he declared his intentions to instead seek the presidential nomination for the Democrat Party. He really doesn't have a chance in hell of winning. But be that as it may, he has actually filed with the FEC to run for president. The other two, one is Jeff Boss. Jeff Boss, you probably know, is a conspiracy theorist. He's a perennial candidate. He filed for his candidacy in 2012 for this upcoming election. And he claims that he was present and witnessed the NSA's pre-arrangement of 9/11. So he's a truther. So the Republicans, the Elmos, have the birthers, and the Smurfs have the truthers. In other words, the truth of the matter is that the United States government took down the towers all by themselves for reasons unknown. I can't even imagine what those reasons would be, but that's what he says, and he says the NSA is after him. But he is running for the Democrat presidency. So you know, the NSA is after you. Why not be as visible as you can possibly be by running for president? What you gonna do? Then there's a performance artist, a perennial candidate. Again, he's run for so many different kinds of offices at the state and local level, and now, of course, for president. He's from Massachusetts, and he is a Vermin Love Supreme. Vermin Love Supreme. What a name, folks, huh? He ran for the, what you call it, the party of, gosh, I can't believe I remember this word now. He started his own party, and I can't remember what it was called, but be that as it may, he runs pretty much on dental hygiene is one of his big things. He would first pass a law where everyone is absolutely required to brush their teeth. So where Obama passed a law where everyone's required to buy health insurance, with this guy, all you'd have to do is brush your teeth. He's got something called the Flying Monkey Public Safety Assurance Program and Time Travel Research Funding. Big thing with this guy. He declares himself as the only candidate for president that has actually shared a kidney with another human being. So that's his deal. He also went undercover as a presidential candidate, Ken Stevenson, to get on the inside of the right wing inner circles. That was his. He actually made a movie about it. He's got 5 movies out there, and so that's his deal. But anyway, those are 3 candidates that are already declared as running for the nomination for the Democratic ticket for president, But there is one candidate you might consider a little more serious that has actually formed an exploratory committee, that is Jim Webb, the senator from Virginia. He was U.S. Secretary of the Navy in the 80s, the last couple of years of Reagan, in fact. So you might like that. But publicly expressing interest, of course, and topping that list is Hillary Clinton, who, of course, has not formed an exploratory committee yet, but she did write a book. So they hard choices. There you go. And she, of course, was senator from New York from 2001 to 2009 before she became Barack Obama's U.S. The Secretary of State. But that's Hillary. Everybody knows my feelings on that. If Hillary won, and she is the preeminent front runner, even without having formed her exploratory committee, if she runs, I predict that unless Mitt Romney runs again and gets that nomination for the Elmos, that she'll lose. Her time, I think, has come and gone. I think she is exactly, as Axelrod said, way too cautious. She plays prevent defense. I think she kind of does that even on the world stage. So anyway, that's Hillary. She's the lead. Of course, there's always Joe Biden. I love this man. He's, of course, VP. Senator from Delaware until he got the vice presidency. He's run in many times for president. It would not be his first time. Actually, he's only done it twice, 88 and 2008. But, he could run again. Vice presidents often do. He still seems to have never had his wits about him. But you know, that's the race. Howard Dean has expressed interest in running for president. I don't think there's going to be any takers there. And then Luis Gutierrez, he's of course the a member of the Chicago City Council, representative from Illinois since 1993. And here's a guy I really like on the Democratic side of things is Joe Manchin. In fact, I got to tell you guys, I would not be surprised if Joe Manchin switched parties at some point down the line. I think the only thing that keeps him Democrat is the crazy social positions that the Republicans tend to take on the Elmo side of the aisle. Martin O'Malley, governor of Maryland, another good one. By the way, Joe Manchin and Martin O'Malley both support the XL pipeline, so I don't know how well they would do in the Democrat primaries with the liberal base of that party. Ed Rendell, of governor of Pennsylvania, has also expressed interest in running for president. He was also the mayor of Philadelphia, of course, before he became governor of that great state. And a guy that everybody's got to love, Bernie Sanders. He's that independent from Vermont that generally caucuses with the Democrats. And, you know, if I was going to say that he had a younger female counterpart, that would be Elizabeth Warren. And she is my top pick for the Democrats, as everyone well knows. Brian Schweitzer, governor of Montana, has also expressed interest in running for president. There's others that have been in the political discussion for the Smurfs to run for president, but these have not expressed an interest in running for president. But people talk about them, so I'm going to mention them real quickly. Tammy Baldwin is a U.S. senator from Wisconsin since 2013, so she's a newbie, but she was a representative with them for 14 years before that. Steve Bullock, governor of Montana since 2013, and before that he was attorney general of Montana. Here's one that would be really cool, and people have talked about this. George Clooney, actor and filmmaker, of course, one of my favorites. He would make a cool president in a movie. But then again, people say that about Ronald Reagan, and he turned out to be, I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, a really good president. Andrew Cuomo has been talked about in political discussion circles. Russ Feingold as well, of course. Al Franken. You got to be kidding me that he's on this list. This guy shouldn't even be a senator, and he's being talked about president. Go figure. Maggie Hassan, I've never really heard of her, but she's the governor of New Hampshire. And some people think she'd be a great choice. Janet Napolitano. Yeah, right. William McRaven, a retired admiral and former commander of the United States Special Ops. Don't know a whole lot about him, but seems like a unique choice for president. Mark Warner. Now, this guy is actually getting a lot more talk lately. Senator from Virginia. He was their governor from 2002 to 2006. He's been their senator since 2009. A lot of positive things being said about him. Jay Nixon, governor of Missouri, also in the political discussions for president. But there's a long list of people who have declined, saying that they won't run for president. And, of course, on that list is Elizabeth Warren. And I still think that she's very careful when she chooses her words. She says, I'm not running for president. She always says that. She's never attached it to I'm not running for president in 2016. But interesting take on that. She always follows that with, I'm just interested in helping my fellow Democrats win as many seats as possible in the 2014 midterm. So she's very cautious with how she chooses her words when she's asked that question about presidents. And I think the article might have convinced me about her being better off as a people's advocate, whether that's in the Senate or outside the Senate. But anyway, that's the political field for the Smurfs. And if we switch on over to the Republicans, they have their own crazy, and that's this guy named Jack Valeur. He has already filed with the FEC for his nomination or for the primaries to run for the Republican nomination. This guy is a genuine whack job. I hear you people on the Smurf side of the aisle talking about Ted Cruz and talking about Paul Ryan and talking about Marco Rubio. You ain't seen nothing till you've seen this guy. This guy has campaigned for President of the United States in every presidential election since 1988 as a member of the Republican Party. He asserts on his campaign website that his platform is based on the 1611 authorized King James Bible, and that has never changed. As a candidate, he calls for the elimination of liquor. I already hate him. He calls for the elimination of abortion and pornography. All right, he's got two strikes out of three, although I'm pro-choice. Everybody knows that about me. And he advocates teaching the Bible in public schools and criminalizing homosexuality. This guy that he attaches himself to the Republican Party is just, or that they let him. That's even worse. But he blames the ills of society on those that he has characterized as, I take a deep breath, atheists, Marxists, liberals, queers, liars, draft dodgers, flag burners, dope addicts, sex perverts, and anti-Christians. So there you go. That's his gig. He's already filed to run for president as a Republican. So what I'm getting at here is with this nut job and the two nut jobs on the Democratic side of the aisle, and of course the only serious one that's already filed, and that's Robbie Wells, the former head football coach of Savannah State University. If everyone else says, yeah, I'm not running, if Hillary decides not to run, if Joe Biden decides not to run, if Howard Dean decides not to run, Joe Manchin decides not to run, if everyone decides not to run on that side of the aisle, and on the Republican side of the aisle, Jeb Bush says, nah, you know, I changed my mind, I'm not running. And all the other people that were mentioned in this Republican, which I'm going to get to in just a second, all say no. And we could have a genuine nut job for a president the next go-round. Of course, I'm pretty sure American apathy would kick in pretty quick. But so on the Republican side, of course, you know that Jeb Bush has formed a PAC and an exploratory committee and has raised tons of money. I just don't even see any reason for any of these other guys to run, other than they said you want to, you know, take stage and be heard. Why it's mentioned that publicly expressing an interest in running for president anymore is Michelle Bachmann is beyond me, because I don't think she is. John Bolton, I always liked that guy. Ambassador to the United Nations 2005 and 2006. He was, by the way, nominated on a recess nomination. Barack Obama caught flack for that, but I think this guy was a bigger nomination than the ones that Obama has made. Ben Carson, really cool guy. I like him. Neurosurgery. He's a director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins University. He's an author and retired as director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. Chris Christie, not a chance. Just not going to happen. You know, go to go to a concert, fall asleep. That one's done. Bob Corker, he's a guy, just doesn't really excite me. Ted Cruz, certain factions get excited about Ted Cruz, but he's only going to take the stage just to have his piece. Not even really sure why he's considered a Tea Party candidate, but what you going to do? Bob Elrich, governor of Maryland, again, not another exciting guy. Carly Fiorina, wasn't she, I believe, the CEO of Hewlett Packard, and kind of took that, and I think she ran for senator out in California and lost. I think she was running against Boxer. I don't remember. Anyway, she lost. Jim Gilmore, the governor of Virginia, Lindsey Graham has also expressed an interest in running for president. Of course, you know Mike Huckabee has quit his show on Fox to consider his political future. I don't think he has one. But I think any time you do a show like that where every single thing you say is recorded, there's just too much ammunition against you. But Mike Huckabee, he's pretty careful about the stuff he says. I've seen him do some interviews with Jon Stewart, and he's very brave and bold to do repeat appearances on Jon Stewart's show because that's not an easy gig to do. Bobby Jindal, it's never gonna happen. That guy is just, oh man, who wants a geeky president, really? I mean, he's a minority, and I think that's really cool that he's got. And this is a pretty diverse group with the GOP. But I saw him do that response to the State of the Union address for Barack Obama, back towards the beginning of Obama's presidency, and it was just horrible. It really was. So, Peter King, representative from New York. Again, none of these candidates are really exciting. George Pataki, governor of New York, he's all right. Sarah Palin, is she really still expressing an interest in being president? I don't think so. Rand Paul definitely is, and a lot of people love this guy. But he has recently said that he won't run if he can't win. Well, how could you know that? How can you know if you're going to win or not? So, anyway, Mike Pence, governor of Indiana, Rick Perry, governor of Texas, Marco Rubio from my great state of Florida. I think Rubio's a great guy. He's had some very pointed things to say about Barack Obama and a lot of his recent executive actions. Paul Ryan, Lion Ryan, as my friends on the Smurf side of the aisle love to call him. I mean, say what you want. He's been a great budget director, if you ask me, but who am I to know? Rick Santorum ran for president, bowed out to Mitt Romney. Donald Trump, please. I don't think so. Scott Walker has been stepping up his political capital with victory after victory after victory in Wisconsin. So, certainly an interesting character there. He does have a lot of charisma that could draw you. Other potential candidates that I don't really think are going to happen here. Herman Cain, who was my dark horse in 2012, but that just didn't happen. There was just too much baggage in his closet there that may or may not have even been true. Mitch Daniels, president of Purdue University. John Kasich, governor of Ohio. Susana Martinez, governor of New Mexico. The blue state of New Mexico has a red governor. Rick Snyder, governor of Michigan. And John Thune, U.S. senator. And here's one that ain't gonna happen. Alan West, representative from my great state of Florida, that one's just never going to be. So anyway, those are other people that have been talked about in the circle of presidential consideration. But only right now, at this very point, we only have three people that have filed with the FCC that are whack jobs and one that is a former head football coach. Well, I guess if you run a football team, you can run a country, right? So, but that's some field a list of potentials, eh? America has such a pool of quality parasites from which to draw. Who would you write in if you could? Give me a call. Let's talk about it. Come swim in my pond. The number to call, 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. And now I want to turn to my beloved friends. I don't know if y'all know this or not. I'm not French, but I love the French. I love their culture. I love their people. Okay, so they can be a little snooty, but you know what? We bring it on ourselves. We are so ignorant when it comes to world travel that it doesn't surprise me when the French turn their nose up as soon as they hear English. But anyway, I'm gonna leave that where it sits, but I wanna. Here's the thing that's bothering me about this whole thing, and this is just terribly tragic. I mean, loss of life like this, with senseless, religiously driven murder. There's a couple of things about this that's really bothering me, And I'm looking at François Hollande's statement in response to this horrific event of Islamic terrorist murder. He said an act of exceptional barbarism has just been committed here in Paris against a newspaper. A newspaper, i.e., the expression of freedom, and against a journalist who had always wanted to show that in France they could always work to uphold their ideas and enjoy the very freedom the Republic protects. There were also police to protect them. They, journalists and police, were cravenly murdered. As I speak, 11 people have died and 4 are in critical condition. We don't know yet have a definite toll of all the victims, but there are 40 people who are under protection and who are safe. And so we have put the Vigipirate plan on attack level. That's their counterpart to our terror alert system. The red, orange, yellow, yeah, that one. And action was taken immediately following the attack to find the perpetrators of this act. They will be hunted down for as long as necessary, and they've already done that, so that they can be arrested and brought before judges and sentenced. France is in shock, the shock of an attack, because it's a terrorist attack. There's no doubt about that. Kudos to François for calling it a terrorist attack. Non-kudos for not talking about the impact that Islam has had on these attacks. Now, I'm so tired of people tiptoeing through the tulips on this issue. The bottom line is here, and Barack Obama is as guilty of this, wanting to try these people before judges and sentence them instead of treating them like what they are, the absolute enemy. These people are influenced by a religion that, as much as they want to believe, promotes peace, does not do that. And the thing I refer back to here is 10 to 20 years ago. I don't remember how long ago it was, but there was a string of murders by U.S. citizens that of either a people visiting an abortion clinic or the actual abortion doctors, doctors at those clinics. And what I recall from that era, and it was so long ago, is the Christian religion being lambasted over producing these people. At the same time, you've heard numerous occasions where stump speeches by Elmos are almost directly blamed for these types of actions from anti-government people. And so when I don't understand how it is that you can that we can blame an entire religion for those types of heinous acts. And yet we soft pedal and don't even mention the influence that Islam has on these attackers. That's something that needs to be addressed, and the basic Christian response when people said your religion is the one killing these people and killing those people was that's not what Christianity stands for. We're a religion of love, and I'm, by the way, folks, I'm not a Christian, but this is what they said. This was their response, and the response back was, no. If you're not standing up against it to stop it, then you are just as guilty as the people who pulled those triggers, and that's exactly what we should be saying here. Now, I will say that there have been some big Islamists that have stepped up on this. And one, and I didn't make note of his name, but he is leader basically of Hezbollah. Now, this one's kind of quirky, but he said that, and he didn't refer to the attack here in Paris, but it was recent that he said it. It was after the attack in Paris. I think it was yesterday. But he said that those that behead and slaughter civilians give Islam a worse name than the people who make these cartoons, which was the subject of the Paris. That was the only reference that he made that might have been connected to the Paris terror, Islamic terrorist attack in Paris. These cold-blooded Islamic terrorist killers had been to Yemen to train, and Yemen has claimed responsibility for ordering the attack to appease, not appease, that's not the word I'm looking for, to make retribution for the satirical treatment of Muhammad, who incidentally was also a killer. Read the history, folks. Muhammad was not a peaceful man. He was not like Eddie Murphy in Trading Places. I'm a peaceful man. He's not. And that religion was born of that kind of violence, and clearly it disseminates throughout the religion. I mean, even in the countries that we consider allies, like Saudi Arabia, they still rely on beheading for their executions of prisoners. They still rely on Sharia law. They're still very violent within society as how they deal with people that violate that Sharia law. So this is not something where, oh no, that's not representative of Islam. Yes, it is. And when it's representative of Islam, it is also representative of it's also if it's representative of Islam, that means that when you carry that belief to the next level, it's automatically radical, and it results in things like this, just like it did the Christian religion's emphasis on life led some people to carry out heinous attacks on abortion clinics. I mean, the bottom line here is that it is religious based, and you have to then talk to and about the religion. And I don't think Francois Hollande did that. Barack Obama certainly doesn't do it. He doesn't want to treat these people like what they are, the enemy. They are enemy combatants. And when they're captured, they're not worthy of constitutional protections from our country or France. And France, unfortunately, is one of the Western countries with the largest Islamic population. And they are now paying for that, although they have been relatively immune, almost, it seemed, until now, to their attacks, but not today, not now. And an interesting thing that I read in an article on CNN, CNN by Stephen Carlson, CNN, it was a quote from a guy, last name Benjamin. He was he's a former State Department counterterrorism official, and he's now at Dartmouth College. He said that the Paris attacks showed an evolution of terrorism in a number of ways. There hasn't been, to my knowledge, a major jihadist attack involving assault weapons in the West in his memory. So the fact that it took place was surprising to him. He cautioned that it remained unclear whether the attackers in Paris incident were linked or inspired by ISIS. That's no longer something that isn't clear. But he said, "We have seen just in the last few months, whether it's in Sydney or Ottawa or in other places, that the perceived successes of ISIS in holding territory in Iraq and in Syria have had a galvanizing effect on those with radical tendencies." And he goes on to say, "I fear that this is something we are going to have to get used to." Get used to? Seriously? Listen, If the perceived successes of ISIS in holding territory in Iraq and Syria is what is galvanizing those with radical tendencies, then the solution seems simple to me. We don't have to get used to anything. We build a bomb that explodes in the shape of this so-called new Islamic State. Let those with radical tendencies catch that image on their boob tube. So much for that galvanizing effect. Something we are going to have to get used to? Bah! We Americans need to relearn how to wage war again. The only thing we need to get used to is that this is a war. We need to wage it to win. What was it that Axelrod said about Hillary the other day? In 2007, she was campaigning not to lose. And when you campaign not to lose, losing is usually what you do. And if we are not going to wage this war against these Islamic radical terrorists, if we're not going to wage this war to win, then we need to sit at home, accept our pussification, and wait for death to come to us, because that is exactly what's going to happen. Something we're going to have to get used to. That just boggled my mind when I read that from somebody who's an expert in counterterrorism. Go figure. So anyway, I'm going to switch from that, where death is coming to us, to something I'm really excited about, and that's gas prices. I cannot believe I just want to talk, because I only have just a couple of minutes to talk about this. But one thing that I wanted to mention about the gas prices, where did my notes go on this? There we go. Of course, the prices have been going down, so our gas prices are also going down. But yes, gas prices have dropped sharply. This is from an article in Daily Finance. They've just dropped sharply, but don't assume that they'll necessarily stay that way. Lower costs for consumers have made some lawmakers eye higher gas taxes. So be on your guard, people. The gas prices are low now, so it's a perfect opportunity for these not just at the federal level, but at your local levels, to slip that in there and hope you won't notice it. It'll happen, and you'll just consider it, gas prices went up again. Be careful. And it includes Democrats and Republicans. They're all looking for new sources of revenue. When gas prices are down like this, remember, they take a hit on their gas tax. So anyway, just keep that in mind. Expect states to consider whether they could fill their government coffers by raising those taxes. Now, some housing prices could also drop. Oil is a big source of private, not just public, and income in some parts of the country. Prior to the global price drop, times were good and the money was rolling. If prices stay low for an extended period of time, they will hit the wealth of many and potentially cause a decline in home values in this area. So you need to be mindful that might happen. Tar sand oils could take a beating. They could. Of course, the pipeline, this is one argument that the Smurfs have been making. It's no longer even necessary because the low price of oil. Well, no. Remember, it won't necessarily stay that way. Oil prices have come down. They did it in the 80s, and then they went back up. Remember? That's what they do. That's why the Fed doesn't include fuel prices, oil prices, and food prices in their calculations of inflation, because they're too volatile. They go up, they go down, they go up, they go down. Democrats are using that as another senseless argument against the Keystone Pipeline. Many countries could be hurt, especially countries that depend on oil. Countries like Qatar need oil to be at $77 a barrel to $184 a barrel in Libya. That's for these people to balance their budgets and keep their citizens happy. Russia, which has seen the value of the ruble take a nosedive, needs oil to be at $105 a barrel. Venezuela must have $118 a barrel to keep their lights on and their voters happy. Quite frankly, I don't see any of these countries I really care about. I care about us, and I'm paying less for gas, and I am happy about that. So anyway, that's the show for tonight. Join us Monday night at prime time at 8 p.m. Check us out at 1111broadcasting.com. All right, and over the weekend, do what you love and love what you do.